On January 13, 2009, Doctor of Anthropology and activist Jeff Halper spoke at Dalhousie University about the invasion of the Gaza Strip. This is part four of a five-part lecture series.
So that's at one level, the pacification of Gaza. But I want to just talk for a couple minutes, I don't want to go on too long, about what I call global Gaza. Because what's happening in Gaza also goes beyond, I don't know if I need this anymore, it goes beyond simply those attacks. There's something else happening here that I want to tell you. This, by the way, is my granddaughter. Let me just put up for 1 second just the map of the Bantustan, because I think that's just important to see. And all right, I don't know if it's going to. There's another aspect to the attack on Gaza, of course, and that is that Israel has to redeem itself from the debacle of southern Lebanon, of the Lebanon War of a couple years ago. You know, this was a very serious thing for Israel, what happened. Israelis don't always put it this way, but we lost the war against Hezbollah. And that was very difficult for Israel, not only from the point of view of not achieving whatever military objectives it had, but in a sense, its whole, the Israel's, Israel is at the table with the big boys in terms of global politics, certainly as an extension of the United States, but it's at the table because it's trying to show that it is a strategic ally of the United States. And here in Lebanon, it didn't deliver. Condoleezza Rice, like she's done this time, gave Israel all the time it needed to complete its military operations in Lebanon. You know, the United States kept the UN from imposing a ceasefire for a couple weeks. And Israel could not deliver. And that was a huge blow because it really dented Israel's reputation and the idea that Israel can be an effective ally in the war against terror. So I think part of what's happening in Gaza is that Israel is trying to redeem itself. And the same thing is repeating itself. The United States, with Canada's help, is trying to put off a ceasefire in Gaza to give Israel a chance to complete its mission, which is to destroy Hamas. All right, that's another thing. And here's the picture, finally, of this whole drama of the PowerPoint. This is the picture of the Bantu. This is the two-state solution, the way Israel envisions it. This is the map of the Annapolis process. And that is you take out the settlement blocks that Israel wants to keep. Basically, the Palestinians will get areas A and B, maybe a little fleshed out here and there. And there's 1, 2, 3, 4 cantons that will make up this Palestinian state, so-called state or Bantustan, where Israel then keeps control of the entire country, it keeps control of the border, it keeps control of the movement of Palestinians, of their economy, it keeps control of all the water. 100% of the water in this kind of a scheme is controlled by Israel. It controls the richest agricultural lands. Israel controls what we call Greater Jerusalem. Now, the World Bank estimates that 40% of the economy of a Palestinian state would revolve around Jerusalem, because this is where tourism is, which is by far the largest potential industry that the Palestinians would have. So by cutting Jerusalem out of the Palestinian state, you're really cutting the economic heart out of a Palestinian state. And there's an Israeli architect named Eyal Weitzman who's written a very interesting book called The Hollow Land. Hollow Land. he's an Israeli architect who talks about the vertical, a vertical occupation. He says you can't understand why the borders go like this, why this torturous kind of a shape of a Palestinian Bantustan only from looking at what's on the ground. You have to look what's beneath the ground as well. You have to look at where the water aquifers are, and you have to look at not only aquifers, you have to look at archaeology. That explains a lot of it. Because our contention, the claim that this is the land of Israel that belongs to us, that we were here first, has to do, you know, it's a contest over a national narrative. And for our narrative to win, we have to uncover archaeological sites. So a lot of the settlements don't make any sense politically or strategically, but they make sense if you understand what they stand on top of. So the occupation is under the ground, it's on the ground, and Weitzman says it's above the ground. Because in every draft agreement that Israel has developed, and Camp David and Ottawa and other times, even in the Geneva Accords, Israel controls the airspace, the Palestinian airspace, and the electromagnetic sphere. In other words, that Israel controls the communications. So that basically the Palestinians can get a state. We want a Palestinian state. Or let's say the Israeli governments want a Palestinian state because the same reason that South Africa established its Bantustans. Because there's almost 4 million Palestinians in the occupied territories that we don't know what to do with them. We can't give them citizenship. I mean, if we say this is the land of Israel, and it belongs to us, and it has to be a Jewish state, and we have 250 settlements. Well, if we actually actualized that and made it one state, if we're a democracy, we'd have to give the Palestinians citizenship. Well, we can't do that. They're more than half the population. It wouldn't be a Jewish state. We can't throw them out of the country. We tried in 1948, and Rabin said repeatedly during his life, we never completed 1948. And in many ways, you still have that pressure of ethnic cleansing going on. But we can't throw them out. I mean, how would that look for our PR? And we won't give them a state even on the 22%. So the only way out for Israel is exactly the logic of South Africa. How did South Africa keep itself a white democracy? By creating 10 Bantustans on 11% of the land, cramming the black Africans into those Bantustans, and then you have 89% of the country as a white democracy. The same thing. Israel will expand. And this is the plan of Annapolis. This is the plan on the table. Israel will expand to 85% of the country. It'll lock the Palestinians into 15% in this truncated, cantonized kind of a mini-state in order to get rid of the Palestinian population. And now we've got a Jewish state, a Jewish democracy on 85% of the land. That's what we're trying to do. You know, the fear is that there are Palestinians who might collaborate with this kind of a thing, but the Palestinian people will not. And we all know that Abu Mazen and Fatah actually have lost almost all their credibility. And if it happens, in fact, and this is part of the plan, I think, if it indeed happens that Israel weakens Hamas in Gaza enough that Abu Mazen and Fatah and Dahlan can come back into Gaza and retake Gaza for Fatah, I think that will destroy Fatah, any legitimacy Fatah ever had. In other words, Israel is kind of trying to set up a kind of a civil war in which the collaborationists prevail. I mean, if Abu Mazen comes into Gaza on the heels of the Israeli army, that's not going to exactly endear him to his people. And that's, I think, what's going on here. In other words, we're trying to get to this Bantustan. We could talk about that more after, but I just want to say one more thing. There's one more thing I want to talk about, and that's this idea of global Gaza. You know, Israel sees itself as a regional actor, and not only that, as an extension of the United States, even as a global actor in political affairs. And Israel's particular edge, I don't know, they say, this is Fox News. You ever saw the film Outfoxed? They say is where Fox News gets its news from. They say this or that, so I'm using a Fox News term. They say that there are three industries that run the world. I have no idea if this is true, but this is what they say. Oil, arms, and high tech. It makes certain sense. Maybe there's a fourth somewhere, but that's not it's probably not too far off the mark. Well, Israel is squarely in two out of the three. We don't have oil, okay, but we certainly have high tech and military high tech. And in fact, what we have to understand is that the whole area of high tech, in my view, is militarily based. It's not PCs, and it's not Bill Gates, and it's not all this stuff, it's military. You know, the Pentagon has today $1.4 trillion budgeted for the development of new weapon systems over the next 20 years. $1.4 trillion. Not for the production, for the development of new weapon systems. The vast majority of that money is high-tech stuff. And Israel has really inserted itself into the center of the American military-industrial complex. So that one of the ways it can do that is through high-tech. But the other one is, if we look at the occupied territories as a laboratory, which could also be an explanation why Israel isn't so much in a hurry to get rid of them. Here's a country that has 4 million people as guinea pigs. The Israeli army is in the West Bank and Gaza every single day and night. And who knows what they're doing? Is there any oversight whatsoever? No. And I know that Israel's experimenting on the Palestinians. I go, you know, for the last few years, the anarchists in Israel, the young anarchists, together with local Palestinians, have been protesting the building of the wall in the village of Bilin. And over the years, and I go there occasionally, over the years we've collected about 30 canisters of all kinds of crowd control sprays and powders, and there's a kind of a goo that they throw that they're experimenting on us, or especially on the Palestinians, with everything from from smells that make you nauseous and you throw up, to kinds of a goo that's put on you so that you can be tracked. You know, you can't get it off yourself, and the smell, and you can be tracked for weeks afterwards. You can find all the people that were in a particular kind of an assembly. To sprays, pepper sprays, and tear gas sprays, and all kinds of things. And that's just the little stuff. You know, Israel is developing a form of, Israel is specializing in a form of warfare that's called counterinsurgency. And this is how our language has been corrupted. If you go out on the street and you ask people, who are the insurgents? They'll say they're the bad guys. You know, the insurgents in Iraq, The insurgents are the bad guys. We forget that the insurgents are the people. You know, one of the largest boulevards in Mexico City is called the Avenue of the Insurgents. For the Mexicans, the insurgents are the good guys. It's General Pershing and these guys that are the bad guys. The states are the bad guys. So our whole language has been corrupted. And counterinsurgency is the cutting edge of modern warfare. Urban warfare. Urban warfare is the cutting edge. Today, for the first time in human history, the majority of people live in cities. And armies over the centuries have always avoided cities. I mean, you look what's happening in Baghdad today. Cities are a morass for armies. They get involved. Look what's happening in Gaza. Israel isn't able, with all its strength, to take Gaza in a very easy way. I mean, it still hasn't really come into Gaza City, for example. Armies bomb cities, besiege cities. They don't enter cities. But today, because warfare is against the people, and this has to do with neocolonialism, that's continuing, the North-South wars and so on, we're in a situation now where we're developing weaponry to fight the people in cities. A.L. Weitzman, that I mentioned, has a video that you can watch on YouTube if you look him up. The Israeli army has a school of architecture. There's a school of architecture where they read all the latest, you know, modernist, you know, Foucault and the latest theories on urbanism. And the way in this video they explain what they're doing is that the Israeli army is learning the semantics of the city. How's that for a nice academic jargony expression? In order to turn the city inside out. The problem with urban areas is that you know, the movement is predictable. So if you send an army into a city and they go down the street, it's not very hard to ambush them. So the whole idea that Israel has pioneered in Nablus that has been exported to Iraq is the idea of going through houses. In other words, what you think is private space is actually public space. And there's a fluidity. You know, one of the approaches of urban warfare is called swarming. Swarming. The idea that you come from so many different directions that you just overwhelm. The people defending have no target. They have nowhere to shoot. You're coming from inside. You're coming from through the walls of your neighbor. And if you go to Nablus, you'll see, or Gaza today, you'll see that most of the fighting is taking place not in the streets, but inside the houses. And that's why so many civilians are getting killed in Gaza. So Israel is developing. That's what I'm trying to say. Israel is perfecting in its wars in Gaza and Jenin and Nablus and Hebron and other places, urban warfare, a kind of counterinsurgency that can then be...
This lecture by Jeff Halber was brought to you by CKDU 88.1 FM in Halifax, Dalhousie Student Radio.
Exported.